This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
But also I would like to, right at the beginning of the retreat, I would just like to spend a few minutes just going over our actual meditation, the way we do our meditation. I'm sure you're all very familiar. I hope you are all very familiar with how we go about it. But I think it might be good just to refresh, because I do know, obviously it's very challenging, and it's very easy to go off on a tangent when it's not going the way that you think that it should go. You feel you need to fiddle with it in some way, maybe, I don't know, I'm just speculating. But knowing a little bit about human nature, you may decide to divert slightly, maybe do something else in the expectation that it will bring you back more clearly to how we develop our sitting practice. One characteristic of this group, which is, well, it is the characteristic, I believe, of all groups that have this type of practice in this direct way, where everybody in the group is expected, we're all expected to pursue the same form of meditation. Unlike other groups, people may have more than one form of practice. So you have a room full of people that there may be several different practices going on. That's the way it's done. But the way that we do it, which is quite traditional, is that we only have one. So the expectation is, when I talk about this, is that this is what we're doing. And if anybody has a problem with that, please come and talk to me. Rather than decide to do something else, as I say, maybe because you think it will bring you back to this clearer, or maybe you get a bit bored and just want to do something else anyway. This is about staying with, persevering, and sitting with all of the forces that we all of us carry. There is no exception. All of us carry that do not want you to be still, basically. I mean, that's not like the enemy. This isn't the devil, as some may interpret it to be, but your own inner forces that you've accumulated, developed over the years, this life and no doubt previous lives, where you've lost the ability to just be with how you really are, which is to be still. That is your true nature. Your true nature is still. Nothing disturbs it, but we have to create the conditions once again so that we can discover what is our innate nature. And those forces that we've created, like I say, will keep in play, because they are conditioned forces. They are not a person or people that are determined to make you be a different way. That's the way it can often seem. This is why we get in conflict with ourselves, or we get in conflict with what we imagine to be other beings, other forces. We actually give these forces an identity, and we almost personify them. We create them, make them into a being, and then we have this. Whereas in fact they're just our own inner forces that we've nurtured intentionally or otherwise, to the extent where they are so ingrained that they just don't stop when you want them to. They just naturally play out their condition. And so we all, I'm sure without exception, struggle with this experience of just having the simple aspiration or the simplest desire you could possibly imagine of not wanting anything, of just being still, and how incredibly difficult you find that to be. So you can see your samsara, you can see what you've created, and these demons, or whatever, however you may have clothed them up, are actually your own creation. And it's for you to come to that realization and learn to make friends with them, not to feed them, but to accept them as what they are without reacting, with the mirror-like quality which reflects your true nature, so that they are no longer fed, so you no longer perpetuate these forces. So in time, they begin to fade. They lose their power, their grip. And even if they don't fade completely, they will fade to the extent where they no longer control you, possess you, condition you, but where you have the ability not to become the victim, as you've been previously. So hopefully we've settled with our posture. We have various options of cross-legged, half lotus, easy posture, kneeling on a stool, sitting on a chair, whichever is the one that you've decided that suits you, or whichever one your body decides that you're going to have, never mind what you want, but your body decides you're going to have. And the importance of the posture is to be upright, to have the body upright. Whatever position your legs happen to be in, your body to be upright and get a sense of a solid support with the contact that you may have, which is a three-point contact with your legs and your backside, and with your shoulders back and your chin in, have that uprightness with that slight S shape of your back, not literally straight, but have that slight indentation at the bottom, so that there's a great solidity there. It's so important to get this right, because, you know, we are going to be hopefully meditating for a long time into the future. And if you don't get that right, it really, you know, the body and the mind are not separate. And if your body is not balanced, you really should not expect your mind to be balanced either. To think that you can have the posture any way that you like, because it means that you have to work at this usually, and it's a deliberate form that you put in place, and you have to check it regularly to see that your shoulders are back, your head's not falling all over the place, your back is straight. All of these things, there's a commitment there, and you have to willingly accept that commitment and keep coming and checking it from time to time. You can check it any time. In the middle of your meditation, you can become aware that you're not straight, and then come back and straighten yourself up. Because if your body's not straight, these forces that we all carry, that manifest in the body, in the mind, but in the body, very much in the body, they will prevent you from finding that stillness. It's the way it is. It's just these forces that will come at you in many different ways, that if you don't create the correct form in which to hold them, to contain them, they have the power to influence very much your your aspiration to be still, to be mentally still, emotionally still, they will have their effect on it. They're not, these forces, as I'm sure you'll realize, are not little passive things. They have a great deal of strength, and we have to learn to work skillfully with these in a kindly way, but in a disciplined way, not in a passive way where we just watch them as they take us over, but where we watch them and wake up to them and bring them back into the form, so that you can support their power, and then learn not to feed them, not to be reactive to them in any way, but allow them to be, and allow them to be within that discipline, and then they will in time be tamed. So your form is very, for our particular type of practice, the nature of our practice is that we are very much a body practice, which I'll come to tomorrow. We're very much a body practice. We're very much from the neck down. We have little regard from the neck up. We don't deny it. We can't anyway. It would be nonsense to say that we can exclude our mind. But hopefully we learned to see our mind as a tool, as a skillful way of helping to keep the form, to keep the practice on even keel, but not to dominate it, not to take over. And find that this training is very much working with the emotional, with the life force that we all are. We don't possess the life force, we are the life force. And the life force ultimately is a great mystery. It's far, far more than what you could possibly imagine it to be. But we need to learn to work with those forces and that force. And this is, we have very little conceptual input with our training. Our training is to be in the present moment, and in the present moment there is no concepts, there is no things, there's no jhanati here, now. This is where we are aspiring to come to, just here. And so there was very little thought, in fact no thought, in that experience. But what we have is this mass of untamed life force that, because we can't blame anybody else for this, we have to learn to tame it, to train to tame in a kindly, in a skillful, in a wise way, so that it reverts back into its natural condition before we polluted it, or we made it into a self-identity, so that it can return to its natural stillness, its purity, which has no bounds, which is a part of the whole of creation. This is the great mystery that unfolds to us. This is the reward, if you like, that we can, or the inspiration that we can reflect upon as we engage ourselves, that we are opening the door to a great mystery through the body, through the life force. Therefore we need to be very skillful to keep the form in its proper, in the same way that you would build a house. You would naturally start at the foundation and get the foundation right and have all the various important parts of the structure in place, because you know if you don't do it right, when the forces come, when the wind blows, the storms come, it will fall down, it will damage. This is no different to our form. We deal with the forces of nature, if you like. We're not interested in all the concepts about it, but we deal with it direct. So our form is so, so important. And come back, come and reflect upon that regularly, and just check yourself. Don't think it's a menial something that is not important. You've got more important things to do. Well, you haven't actually. This is so important. And then when you've got that structure in place, you can then begin to work in the body with your with the heart energy, with the emotions, with all the karma that you've created and all the forces that you've created. You can begin to work with those in a skillful way, so that in time, when we touch it, you can. This is not a simple straight line. It oscillates, and we have different experiences, and sometimes we're still and sometimes we're not. This doesn't just go in a straight line. I don't care how long you've been doing it. Don't think it's a progressive thing. That's not the way we're made. We are a creature of lots of forces. And like the weather that we have, we can't predict the weather from one day to the next. And our own weather is of a similar nature. Don't imagine that you can work it out and stick it in a box, that it's like this. Today it's like this, and then tomorrow, and this applies to the retreat. It's like this today, it's going to be like, because it's like this today, it's going to be like that tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and get some sort of a lateral picture. Well, if you do that, well, I think you're going to discover, like you can discover with the weather that we have in this country, that to predict it, you can get it wrong as much as you can get it right. And maybe the best thing is not to predict it at all. And certainly when it comes to what our training, this is one of the insights that we learn is not to project, because it is a pointless exercise. You do it because you want to be in control. That's it. It's not rocket science. You want to be in control. You want to know what's going to happen, so you feel comfortable, so you feel safe. You don't want to open yourself up to the unknown, because you feel you're not in control, and you're not actually. It's true, you're not. But to trust that, and this is where trust comes in. And these are all the skills that we learn as we move forward with our training. These are the insights. These are the little things that we learn through experience, so that we can address our condition in a skillful way, so that things can turn over, so things can fall away, and change can take place, which is quite naturally is what we all want. We all want that change. This is all the sort of mentality, that the understanding that you need to cultivate and to gather. So you take it to your meditation. So you when you sit on the cushion, you go with the right frame of mind, not with the wrong frame of mind, but with the right frame of mind. And I guess you just have to keep making mistakes until you learn. Hopefully you do learn. You learn through awareness, and you see, well, that doesn't work, therefore I won't do it anymore. And you learn. So you have the right framework, so that when you come to the cushion, not only do you have the posture, you have that, but also you have the right mental faculty, so that when you sit and you begin to learn, or you have the aspiration to come into stillness, and all of those forces then begin to come to you. Your mental chattering is always the primary one, which is always with you. But then you have the more emotional things that may start to come through the body that then tie in with thoughts and pump the thoughts up. So they become so real and so alive, and it becomes a mental experience, but also a physical experience, so that you can begin to identify all of this and learn to work with these things skillfully. And this is how the thing matures. So when we sit, that's an ongoing form. That's something for you to just nurture. But when we sit on the cushion, our first focus is to be alive to our chattering mind, and bring skillfulness to the chattering mind to help it settle down so that we're not completely carried and taken and lost in our thoughts. And so we bring our attention down to the rise and fall of our abdomen for that reason, so that we focus with our attention, with our awareness. We bring it down here, so when our thoughts come and we realize that we're off in our thoughts, we catch and we come back. We catch them, we let them go, and we bring our focus. If you focus down here, it's very difficult to be lost in thoughts and be focused here. In fact, you can't. To be focused, that's the your first step. Is that the first taste of skillfulness in your aspiration to be still, is that we deal with the absolute crudeness of that part of us that's never still, which is our chattering mind. So we learn to, and the reason why we come down here, there are many different ways. This is samatha, this is concentration, many different focuses, techniques, methods that you can use to quieten the mind. But the reason why we do this form is it's one of the features of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, of which there are many different categories, boxes, or whatever, levels in fact, really, of subtleness. The reason why we do this, or two reasons, one is non-conceptual. So you're not given a mantra or something to still the mind, a thinking thing, any conceptual thing. And so this absolutely harmonizes with our training, which is a non-conceptual training. So that's why we choose an aspect of Anapanasati. And the other aspect of that is that it is encouraging us, maybe even introducing us to our body, to the physical. So our attention actually comes into the form. You can do Anapanasati up here, around here, all up here. There's lots. Count your breath, which is the crudest method. So you're sort of still from the neck up. We could do that. But actually, what's so crucial with our form of training is that we really have to wake up to our form and realize that our training is seldom, if ever, separate from our body, from our form, and that the form is something that contains a great mystery. That the great mystery of life is in the form. It isn't up here. Up here is just the clouds and delusion, and what you create with your non-understanding. Down here is where you find the truth. Is where you actually really find your samsara. Even though it's manifest so much up here with all the delusionary thoughts that we have, it's manufactured in your body, its heart, if you like, if you can want to call it in those terms. You will find the engine room of samsara is in your body, where it gets its volition, where it just gets its motivation, and so much of it ends up in your head. But that's not its source. Its source is in this thing that our culture gives us no inclination at all as to the mystery of the body. Our culture, this is just a physical lump. This is just a piece of machinery with all bits that just create this mechanical thing that we then have to look after and put medicine in and stuff when it goes wrong. It's just a piece of meat, basically, which we also eat as well. We don't eat human meat, but you know what I mean. We have no awareness of the truth of the body, what the body actually, its secrets, what it really is, beyond the obvious, beyond the physical thing. We can't see beyond that. And so we spend our entire existence up here, and we come to the Dharma, and this is, it's not going to work. This, the mind and body are not two. There has to be an integration and a recognition of the body. And our meditation, this is why we, this is why I've asked you to focus here, not I just plucked it out of the air. A, it's the skillful way of taming the mind in its crudeness, in its crude aspect. But also it's bringing you into your form, and it's taking you actually right to the area where so much of the volition of who you are is, and self-identity is actually focused, which is in the emotional part of our being, which is down here, down in the hara, down below the navel, there. And that area there is one of the most wonderful areas of your body to explore when your mind is still. It is quite amazing, beyond the physical. So that's why we focus here. So that we still ourselves, so that we get a real sense that we've tamed 90% of this mad thing that just won't be quiet. The greatest will in the world, it will not be quiet. It will never take any notice of what you want. It will just carry on, as we all know. But we can deal with it. We can learn to tame it. And that's what we do. And when you feel that that's firmed up, now this again, I think very much the nature of the spirit of our training is that we don't stick everything in boxes. So it's not for 10 minutes or half an hour or 2 hours, like some mechanical thing. Is that your judgment comes into this, but you will learn through time that if you cut corners because you get bored with it, you'll fall back. It won't work for you. So you can't play games with yourself with this, in the sense of when you feel that you're settled, that you can then begin to let go of that one-pointedness, which is the next step that we take. You can cut that corner. I'm so bored with this. I want to come into this great awareness. Well, see where it gets you. Discipline and that discipline with yourself, and that honesty with yourself, not play games with yourself, and see your restlessness and how you want to cut corners, how you just have to learn to, again, part of your skillfulness, no, I'll stay with it, and if it means sitting for the whole period where you're just focusing down here and somehow extracting yourself from your thoughts so you can come back, and you spend the whole period doing that, then so be it. That's the way it is. That's how you are at this moment. And if that goes for 2 periods and 3 periods, if it goes for the whole day, then that's the way it is. Because to not to accept that means that you've got this thing that you've not shaken off, this conditioning that we've all got, that we are goal orientated. I'm doing something in order to get something. And here you're hitting it straight on the nose here, that you want to get somewhere. You want to come into this great mystery, expansiveness, no thingness, shunyata. Much better than watching my thoughts. Much rather be doing that. But in order to get to that expansiveness, there has to be a stillness with you. And if the stillness isn't there, this is not going to happen. Of course, we'd all love to go into that peaceful expansiveness that has no limitations, no person, none of my cares and my woes, no self, no burden, nothing. This this liberation. Of course, we want to go there in an instant, but the truth is that there is a part of you that's not going to let that happen. And that's the bit we have to learn to work with skillfully. And if it means staying with it, for as long as it takes, that's what we do. That happens to be the way you are today, now, this minute, this period of meditation. If that's the way it is, then you accept it and you stay with coming back here, coming back here, coming back here, coming back here. And maybe that's as far as it goes for you. And to be patient and to accept that's the way you are. But the nature of the mind, like the nature of the weather that we experience, you don't know what it's going to be like the next period. Two periods tomorrow, a couple of days down. Oh, I'm going to be like this. The mind, because it's so unpredictable, it can absolutely take you over in this way, and then it can also just give up. And there's a calmness. It falls into the, doesn't stop, but it falls into a calmness that surprises you, because that's not the way it's been for the last hour, 2 hours, 2 days. But it's like the weather, it's unpredictable. Your mind doesn't go in straight lines. So this whole thing of projecting, as I say, is something to wake up to. Don't go there. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for the big con trick of it all, because that would just create all sorts of agitation and restlessness and will actually make the thing worse for you. The more patience, the more acceptance you have, that doesn't feed the mind. The mind won't get the stimulation that it needs to keep proliferating, and it will. So your focus on your hara can last. Well, I'm not telling you how long. This is, again, as I say, it's a part of the nature of our training. We don't do boxes and straight lines. This is very much a doing thing, a living now, which is unpredictable. The mind likes straight lines, so that it's in control. When you let them go, you're into a mystery. You're into the unknown. You don't know how long. But you trust it, you give yourself to it, because that's where your true nature is. That's where the mystery begins to unfold, in that place of unknowing. So I can't tell you how long to focus here. You decide whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or a period of the day, maybe all week, maybe after sitting for a short while. Your mind is more calm. It may come down to seconds. Maybe it will come where you sit on the cushion and you don't need to go there at all. You feel, oh, I feel really settled. In which case, you can go on to, you can let that part go. So, this is for you. It's your training. It's your samsara. you have to make these decisions. You know, and if you play games with yourself and think you can somehow get on the fast track and cut corners, well, okay, well then do that. If you think that works, then do it. Maybe you've got to do these things to learn that it doesn't work that way, or you can trust somebody to tell you that it's not going to work. So rather than waste your time doing that, actually put that habit in place right now, and tame the restlessness and that goal orientated conditioning that we got. I'm doing this. I want to be there. I want to get that. Don't even go there. Well, do it if you want, but you're just going. It may take you months. May take you years. Hopefully you will wake up. Maybe you'll never wake up to it. That actually that doesn't work. Maybe you won't. There's plenty of people don't wake up to that. I can tell you. because it's very subtle. That's crude. When I do that, that's crude. Awful. But this is subtle. It's much, much more subtle than that. But it's still this. And while you're doing this, you'll never discover who you really are. So when you feel you're settled, pretty much settled, and it's unlikely to be 100%, but the mind, but so the mind isn't just taking you off and taking you away and possessing you, but sort of flits in and flits out. You've got awareness, you see it, and you don't go there, you note it, and then you can allow yourself to let go of that one-pointedness here. And your next port of call, as it were, is to come into the body. You're already there, but let become more aware of your body and your totality, and begin to touch the characteristic, the nature of your awareness. And this is so crucial and something to come back to over and over, is that the nature of your awareness is like a mirror. It reflects. It sees and it knows. But your awareness never gets involved with what it sees. You do that with self-identity. You have opinions. You have judgments with what you see, with what you experience. This is not your awareness. Your awareness has none of those dualistic characteristics. And if you can begin to wake up to that, begin to see that, and not pull your awareness into your dualistic world and see it as another part of your dualistic makeup, your skandhas, that somehow it's a part of that bundle. If you can begin to see that this has a quality, this has a characteristic, if you like, a quality that has no parallel with any other part of your makeup. If you can begin to pick that, you are beginning to open up to that which is beyond me. For the first time in your life, probably, you're breaking free of the prison of self. And begin to wake up to that quality. And of course, what is happening is awareness is waking up to itself. There isn't anything other than awareness. I mean, this is again, the awakening of awareness, that you are awareness. Awareness isn't another object like all the other parts of you, some dualistic. Awareness has a completely different, I say characteristic, but it has to be a thing to have a characteristic, but just for description, so I can try and get it across. It has a quality, I think that's a better word. It has a quality unlike any other part of you. That the more you can pick, the more you realise that, hang on, there's something different about this awareness that you want to give more and more and more and more attention to. You want to bring it so that it becomes your main focus of attention, if you like. It's very difficult struggling with the words here, because it's actually awareness. There isn't a third party involved here, because you are your awareness. This awareness is actually beginning to wake up to itself. Prior to that, awareness thinks that it's a part of the personality. It's a part of the ego. And it's enslaved to whatever, and a part of this world that you create. Now it's beginning, because for the first time you're beginning to bring a little bit of stillness to your life, to your makeup. That part of you that's always thought, if you like, always assumed it's a part of the dualistic world, is beginning to, well, maybe I'm not a part of this dualistic world. There. You are at a crossroads, that already, even though we are just learning to be still, you're opening the gate, the whole area of yourself, of insight, of getting to know who you really are. And you've not even turned to insight, you're just settling yourself down. But for us, that whole aspect of awareness is the heart and soul of this training. That's not a concept. That's not a formula. That's not any sort of concoction. It's just an empty experience there that you can't put it in a box anywhere. But that's the nature of our training. This is why this is a non-conceptual cultivation. We don't heap concepts on it and stick it in boxes, because that you can't do that with awareness. So with that awareness, you're discovering the mirror-like quality and all of its implications. It has a mirror-like quality because it isn't that part of you that attaches, that likes and dislikes, good and bad. I'm right, you're wrong. I like myself, I don't like myself. That's not awareness. And yet that's who you really are. So with that awareness, with that mirror-like quality, you can flow freely, begin to get the sense of spaciousness with awareness, that actually it doesn't have any limits, it's not in a box, that actually you can go anywhere with it. So roam your body, and from this, corralling it like this, now you're allowing it to step out of that space and be aware of your body, be aware of the feelings, your emotions, how you're feeling, all of those aspects. But just touch, you know, your legs, your knees on the ground, your hands touching each other, how much pressure you've got, whether that's light or whether it's tight, tension in your shoulders, your back, all of it. No opinions, just awareness. Mirror, just a mirror. So you're waking up to discovering parts of your makeup that you probably has never been on your radar before. No, but you're not getting involved with any of it. You're just waking up and seeing. Now you're really beginning to get what we do, as it were. Get what this is about. Because this is just about awareness. And discovering the nature of awareness is that it isn't something that's always looking after itself. It has no sense of identity that it needs to look after, that it needs to control, that it's that which is in fear, it's that which is that has desire, aversion, that has this sense of having to look after us. And in fact, because of this mirror-like quality, this ability to just reflect but not get involved, it isn't actually a part of all of these things that diminish you, that imprison you. But actually, its nature is one of openness, that it doesn't cower away, that it doesn't run after, but it's open. And it has the quality. The more you can trust, and golly, this is such an important word, trust it. Not feel yourself vulnerable and back off and shut the door, draw the curtains, build the walls. Don't blame that on your awareness. Poor awareness get blamed for that. These are these forces that come in that create the sense of self, that start to kick in quite of themselves. When the conditions are right, they will rise and create the sense of self. Then you buy into it and then you play the game, you reinforce it. If you've come to your awareness and you begin to find that awareness, you will see that the nature of your awareness, the quality of your awareness, is that it is open and inclusive. It's not fear. It's beyond fear. It's beyond desire. you begin to touch that part of you that's liberated. But we find that mirror-like quality that doesn't get involved, and you can scan around your body and enjoy the freedom of finding parts of yourself that you then don't have to get involved with and don't have to have an opinion. Oh, my pain, my legs, oh, why, my. That's not awareness. That's your self-identity. Discover that part of you that it knows it. It's not blind. It doesn't try to turn its back on it. It's very alive. It knows it, but it doesn't get sucked into it. It doesn't identify. There is no self-identity there. So when you have this discomfort in your... Maybe this is what you will come to, that when you do let go of your one-pointedness, maybe your attention will immediately go to your legs. if you know, you're sitting and you've been sitting for a while and you get discomfort there. You see, there's a part of you that it's my legs and my pain and my this and my that, and how am I going to survive? How am I going to get through? And all the heaping on to this experience. And discover that the more you heap on, the more you identify, the more, absolutely more, you're going to make it more difficult for yourself. It's called making mountains out of molehills. The molehill is there, and your awareness will know the molehill, but it won't identify with it. And if you don't identify with it, you won't turn it into a mountain. It will be a molehill, and it will be unpleasant, but you won't make it much, much worse than it needs to be. There you're beginning to get the taste of freedom. And that freedom is within you. You're not manufacturing something and then bringing it to you and then convincing yourself of something and then you buy into something. All manufactured, all a part of the dualistic world that you recondition yourself. And okay, you can do these things, but they will have a life, and then it will go into change. Begin to touch that part of you, begin to wake up to that part of you that is aware of the touch, the taste, the smell, all of this, the hearing, there's always some sound going on somewhere, your feelings. That part of you that actually is not a part of those experiences, and yet that part of you that you are now discovering is the real you. This is not some objective exercise of some... The implications of that realization are far, far greater than you probably realize, but hopefully you do realize more and more. But the implications of that is so big. It's so big. You are touching your liberation. You are touching your awakening. Your enlightenment is there. And you know, don't... open up to it. Open up and realize that there's a part of you that's not... That reflective quality, that aliveness, that brightness, that is aware that of everything that comes into its field, and yet in that same moment it is not a part of it. It doesn't get involved. It doesn't have an... It doesn't drag itself down into a poor little me. And then the whole world shuts down, and you're not aware of anything in the whole world, and this great mystery that we're all living in the middle of, it all gets lost, and it all comes down to, oh, me and my poor leg. And this is what happens to us, but because we are with the nature of our training, is that we're not bothered with any concepts. We're just beginning to find something that's already there. We're not even making it. Never mind it already being there. There's not like we find something that we then have to develop it and cultivate it and feed it and so that it gets bigger and better and all the rest of it. We don't even have to do that. There isn't anything to do but to wake up to it. More and more wake up. And you begin to touch that when you let go of your one-pointedness. And you begin to see the quality of your of this thing called awareness. And that you can actually be alive and be aware to of something. Like you know, like the discomfort in your legs, or maybe it's your shoulders or something emotional, something that's kicking on for you at that time. You can become aware of all, of whatever that is, but not get involved with it. And say, no, I'm not going there. I know it, yeah, but I'm not buying into this little thing. I'm sorry, I'm not buying into this. Because there's a part of me that's actually, I'd rather take refuge in that part of me that's not consumed by this experience that then becomes me. This is me, my pain, my leg, my world. Awareness. And you can begin to go through that doorway, go through that opening when you let go of your one point. You don't when the samatha itself won't give you that insight because it's a concentration. It's bringing you down to one. You put the blinkers on, and it will give you that stillness, that concentration, but it won't give you. It won't introduce you to the nature of your awareness and the doorway, the implications of discovering the nature of your awareness. Never mind all this other stuff, dualistic stuff, all this vipassana stuff and samatha stuff and all of that. Just come to your awareness. Which is beyond all of those dualistic things. Not that I'm knocking any. We'll come back to these. These are very important. I'm not poo-pooing them by any stretch. But there's another party, if you like, that's involved. And if you can find that, there you'll see that it's beyond all of these dualistic other things that we can begin to use skillfully. You can begin to see it's like an opening, it's like a doorway into something where you've never been there before. You've never stepped through the doorway. You've always been in your duality, whatever it may be. Now you find yourself on the threshold of a new experience. And the amazing thing is that experience is what you are. It's not a third party. It's not another thing like all these other things are things. You're on the threshold there, and you come to that by nurturing the nature of our meditation, which is non-conceptual, which is about learning to find that stillness, learning to find of letting go of being caught by the dualistic world. Of just when you do that, you begin to awaken to another part of you that's not a part of that, and not just recognize that and say, "Well, that's very nice, thank you," and then go back into some dualistic thing, but actually stay there. Don't go there. Stay here and say, "Right, this is it. This is the center of my mandala. This is the absolute heart of my training." Now I may go back into these other aspects. That's fine. But this is number one. This is the heart of this training, which is that finding that stillness within you, and not thinking, well, that's it. I found the stillness. Actually, that's only the beginning. To get to that realization, that awakening, if you like, and think, well, that's it. Because there's nothing there. So you think, oh well, that's it. I've done it. Oh, by golly, you've not even begun. When you could begin to step through that opening, as it were, just to use these crude words, when you step through that, opening, because it's now primary for you, then you can begin to open up into who you really are and to discover who you really are. And all of this comes through being still, finding your awareness, learning, wake up to the that reflective quality of awareness. It's like a mirror, that can with great clarity display everything within its field, with a clarity that leaves no doubt. You look into it and there is no mist, there is no dust. It's crisp and clear with whatever it is that it's reflecting. But that mirror never ever gets involved, never has an opinion with what it reflects. And that mirror-like quality is what we really bring into the centre of our mandala, so that we can begin to reflect, so that we can begin to see ourselves and know ourselves. So that mirror-like quality, the more and more that we can bring into our experience, not just on the cushion, which is the easy bit, but off the cushion, through your daily life. And that quality that, so when you walk, you know you're walking. So you know you're walking. It's not good, it's not bad, you know you're walking. You're walking down the road and you know you're walking down the road. You're not walking down the road and you're off thinking about what you're going to have for your dinner, or the conversation you had with somebody yesterday, or what you're going to do tomorrow. All this past and all this future business that we get lost. But when you walk, no, you're walking. You're just in this moment and you're walking. Now that may seem, I don't know, that might be boring for you, but that's where your liberation is. And to nurture that, not just touch it and know, but to come back to it more and more, will put you in a place where you no longer hold on to these things, where you need your attachment, your good and your bad, your views and opinions, where you learn to let all of these things go and just come back. This is the path of liberation. And we do it in the absolute, you cannot get more direct than this. It is totally, totally uncluttered with methods and techniques, all things that are there to help you, but they also, you can also get them wrong. And you can go off and you can develop attachment to these things and miss what they're actually pointing to, what they're there for, is to help you to let go and to come into this present moment. We don't even bother with any of those, so we have no dangers. You don't have anything to get lost in. We go straight to the heart of the matter, as it said. And we learn it on the cushion. This is our meditation. It is so simple. It is so difficult to pull off that simplicity. But when you pull it off, it is beyond words to describe its richness. Words cannot touch the richness that comes out of that ability to be with your awareness and to open up and to let go, as you will have to do if you want to stay with your awareness. So your awareness that is open and inclusive, and what is the ultimate quality of your awareness? It is far more than just something that can reflect. It's not a thing, but it's more than just reflection. The mysteries that are buried, that are waiting to be discovered by learning to be still, by learning to reflect and to be open. This is it. You don't need anything else. To put this into, to nurture this, the ability to come to that place of stillness, and to be able to reflect and to wake up and to see yourself and to see your all the things that define you as an individual, as a personality, and see the reality of all of those things. Discover that part of you that's not a part of all of that. Here we are. This is what we're... If you want to call it a journey, you can. It's not even a journey, but journey makes it sound inviting. So we call it a journey. It's a journey that goes this way. All of this, when you sit to do your simple meditation, when you just come and bring your focus here and get bored stiff with doing it hour after hour, this is the fruit of bringing that discipline to your life, learning to taking yourself to experiences that you've never had before, i.e. the experience of being still, taming the wild forces that we have in our form. Never mind the chattering mind, there is that, but there's all the emotional forces that we all are all caught by. Learning to tame all of those that will get tamed the more that we commit ourselves to coming back to that place of stillness. It means by definition that these forces have to be tamed. They lose their power, they lose their influence. This is what we do when we sit and do our meditation. I don't really see what more you need than that. And that's what we do. This is our training. This is the meditation of this group. And I hope you're all engaging with that to the best of your ability. And I hope this has just helped to clarify the nature of our training, of our meditation, if you like, if you want to reduce it to that, and to grow into it. And if you find it difficult, you can see the forces that you are dealing with. Grow into it. The stillness is the most natural state of being that there could be. So I'll leave that with you for today.